Well, hey, church, glad to see you guys here this morning. It was actually 6 years to the day ago that I took a group of high schoolers to down to Arkansas on a week-long canoe trip. It was one of those trips that looks really good on paper, but then when you're actually doing it, you hate your life. You get what I'm saying? I mean, I'm talking like we had limited food, which I'm not about. We were sleeping on like river rock and stuff, not campgrounds. We had no bathrooms. It was like 100 degrees each and every day, and we're dragging our canoes through the rocks. Like that's how this trip was. So it didn't turn out as beautifully as I had planned. But I remember the first day. It was on a Sunday. We get there, and it's Sunday night, and it's dark out, and I've been driving all day, and it's kind of wiped out. It was before the canoe trip even started. We were leaving the next morning, and so I'm there, and I decide, I'm like, hey, this is my last chance for a bathroom for like a week. Like, I'm gonna go to the bathroom. I'm gonna enjoy myself for a while. You get what I'm saying? All right. Okay, and so I'm like, I'm gonna take a shower, I'm gonna brush my teeth, you know, with real running water, and I'm gonna use the facilities, I'm gonna enjoy every minute. Okay, that's my plan. And so I'm walking down this road, it's about maybe half a mile or so, maybe three quarters of a mile to the bathroom. We're at this like small campground, and I'm walking down this like country road, and this road is like, it's not in great shape. Like it's got, you know, cracks everywhere that they've been filling in, and so there's like black lines all over the place. Some of you guys know what I'm talking about. And so I'm walking down this road, and I'm on my phone because I've, you know, getting caught up on everything. I'm on Snapchat and Instagram and, you know, answering people and doing whatever I was doing. And I noticed, like, out of the corner of my eyes, I'm walking, I'm like, did that crack just move? I think that crack just moved. And I'm looking, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe I'm like seeing things, or maybe I don't know what that was, but all right, keep walking. And then I notice as I'm on my phone again, and I'm like, wait, I think something else just moved. And so I'm like, all right, I'm a little alarmed at this point. I'm all alone, I'm out there, and I'm like, okay, like, what's going on here? And so I get out I turn on my flashlight on my phone, and I start looking around. And what I discover is that there's a lot of cracks in this road. But there's also some snakes on this road as well. I don't know, they're like soaking in the heat or whatever they were doing. And I'm like, and so I'm looking, I'm like, there's a bunch of snakes, like just like hanging out on this road. And I'm like walking in my flip-flops, just like, yo, what's up, on my phone, not paying attention. And I'm looking back, I'm like, I would have walked over a snake, like, you know, 15 yards. And I'm like, okay, I'm kind of freaking out a little bit. All right, I don't know if these snakes are poisonous or whatever. Like, I don't know anything about snakes. I just don't want to mess with a snake, you know, like I'm just not into snakes. And I can tell you one thing, that for the rest of that walk, I have my light on, I am focused, I am alert, okay? I think that might be the best word for what I was doing. I'm alert about what's going on around me. Like, the road has my attention. I got my mission, I'm going to the bathroom, I'm gonna live it up when I get there, I'm gonna spend as long as I want in the bathroom, and then I'm gonna come back, and I am like not distracted by my phone, I'm not distracted by anything. I'm focused on what line is a real line, and you know, like a crack, and what line is a snake, and I'm focused on that. Now, work with me here for just a second. That, in a sense, is how a Jesus follower should live, right? We're going to talk about today, Jesus is going to tell us that Jesus followers, that we are to be alert, right? We are to be focused on our job and focused on our mission, and we are to be aware of what God is doing around us, right? Last week, we left off in the story of Jesus. He's in his last week, all right, of life, all right, before he's crucified, and he rides into Jerusalem, kind of like a king. Everybody's worshiping him, and he's going to be killed just later on in the week. And so he spends his week basically teaching at the temple complex each and every day. And so on Monday he goes, he overturns the tables. You guys, we talked about that that week. He kind of angers the religious leaders. And then on Tuesday he spends all day teaching in the temple and teaching in the temple complex. And at the end of the day, it's been long. All right, they're all tired. It's been a long day. And as they're leaving the temple, Jesus and his disciples, they're talking about, all right, how awesome the temple is. This is what happens. It says Jesus and his disciples, they were talking about the temple and how it was adorned with all these beautiful stones and gifts that have been dedicated by a bunch of rich people to God. All right, so as you can imagine this, I want you guys to picture this in your mind. Here's Jesus and his disciples. It's been a long day. It's in the evening. They're leaving the temple complex. They're going down. Remember, the temple sat on top of a large hill, small mountain, however you want to describe it. And so really above the city of Jerusalem. And as they're leaving, the disciples are like, dude, this place is sweet. They're like looking around. There's like pillars everywhere. And they're like, Jesus, isn't this place sweet? And it was sweet. The place was awesome. All right, let me go off in like a quick tangent. You guys good with this? Okay, all right, real quick. This is for the nerds out there. And I know we got some. All right, we got a good chunk of them out there. But originally, King Solomon completed the first temple, okay? This happened in 950 BC, so almost 1,000 years before Jesus was on the scene. And it was huge. In fact, the highest point of the temple was like 20 stories tall. And this is in the ancient world, so this is a really, really big deal. And that temple survived for about 400 years until Babylon came in and they defeated Israel and they came down and they really destroyed Jerusalem and the temple. That happened in 586 BC. They came in and they destroyed it. At that point, Babylon, what they did is they took a bunch of the Jewish people that were left that weren't killed, they took them and they replanted them in other countries and other areas of the world. And so for a while there, for about 70 years, there was nobody living in Jerusalem. There was really, really nobody in the land. And it was God's punishment. We call that the exile period, where God is like, hey, you Jewish people, you guys aren't following me. So I'm going to take you and I'm going to take you out of the promised land. And I'm going to take you out there for about 70 years. And that's exactly what happens. 70 years later, Persia comes and defeats Babylon. And this guy named King Cyrus, when he steps on the scene, and after he has defeated Babylon, he says, hey, all you Jewish people and really all you people groups, all right, that Babylon has moved you all around the world, you guys can go home. And he tells the Jewish people, you guys can go and you guys can rebuild your city and rebuild your temple or whatever you want to do. That's fine with me. You guys go ahead and do it. And we see that happen in the book of Ezra, where Ezra, who's a priest, and a bunch of Jewish people, they move back to Jerusalem and they rebuild this temple. But this second temple that they build is nothing compared to Solomon's. In fact, there's some people who are, I don't want to say older, okay, who are like in their 80s, who could remember 70 years before, back when they were just little kids, they can remember Solomon's temple. When they see the second temple, Ezra says they cried. They're like, man, this is nothing. This is so embarrassing. This is so, so sad. And so that second temple lasts for 400 years. 400 years later, I guess I should say, this guy named King Herod became governor of the land. Now, King Herod was, he managed the area of Israel. He worked for Rome and the emperor. And King Herod, he's the same guy that tried to have Jesus killed, if you remember the stories from like Christmas and stuff. And so back when Jesus was born. And so King Herod, when he became the governor, he greatly enlarged and expanded their little sad temple. And this is what he did. This is what he built, okay? This is the temple that he built. And he started this process in 19 BC. All right, and this place was huge. What he did was he enlarged the temple area to twice as big as what it was previously under Solomon, and he built these massive retaining walls, and this area is about 35 acres, okay? So just to put things to scale, I mean, this was just huge. It sat on top of this mountain, and what he did was he brought in slabs of white marble from far off that were 65 feet, I mean, just picture this, all right? A slab of white marble that was 65 feet long, 12 feet high, and 18 feet wide. That's a big rock, right? Some of you guys aren't sure, all right? 65 feet long, people. All right, that's huge. 12 feet high, 18 feet wide. And so he built these retaining walls with these just massive, huge stones, and then he covered them with gold and silver and all kinds of stuff. In fact, there was so much white marble on the Temple Mount and gold and silver that from a long distance, as travelers were traveling to Jerusalem, it looked like a snow-covered mountain peak, okay? That's what people would say back then. And this temple took 80 years to finish. In fact, it was finished, I think, near like 54 AD or something like that. And so it was much bigger than Solomon's temple, and it was much more beautiful and much more lavish than Solomon's temple. And this was the temple that Jesus taught in. In fact, ancient scholars argued that it should be included among the seven wonders of the world. The mount and the retaining walls that are there actually still stand today. I mean, this is what it looks like today. You can see the Temple Mount is still there. Obviously, the temple is gone, and where the temple was now sits a mosque called the Dome of the Rock. And even though Israel's like the capital city, or sorry, Jerusalem's like the capital city of Israel, and this is Jerusalem as it sits today, the Jews don't have control of the Temple Mount. That's actually still controlled by the Muslims, and so that's by the Arabs. So that's what's going on here today. That's what it looks like today. But back to what it looked like with Herod and what he built. The disciples, as you can imagine, this they are looking at the temple as they're walking away, and they're having the same questions that I would say, that I know I'd say. I'd be like, "Yo, Jesus, these rocks are huge. How do they get them here?" All right, like, how do they even move this? Like, you know, Jesus, like these buildings are massive. And remember, they're still under construction. And so they're probably all thinking, like what's this place going to look like when it's done? This place is going to be awesome. It already is awesome. And Jesus turns to his disciples as they're walking out and really walking down. He says, "You see all these things? They're like these pillars and these giant buildings and these towers and all these things that are around." He says, "Actually, the day will come when not one stone will be left on another that will not be thrown down." And the disciples, they hear this, they're like, "What? wait, what?" Like they don't know what to say. Remember, they think that they are going to crown Jesus as king during this very week. They're like, at the end of the week, Jesus is about to be king. It's about to be awesome. Cannot wait. Maybe, you know, maybe he'll put me over governor or something. Like, they think they're going to get these like sweet gigs under Jesus' reign. They're going to separate from Rome, which owned the world at this point in history. And they're thinking to themselves, they're all like, why would the temple be destroyed? That doesn't make any sense. Like, why would Jesus allow that to happen? And so Jesus, like, they don't know what to think. And Jesus says some things sometimes that's just kind of difficult. And they're like, "Okay, Jesus, there you go again. Like, what does that mean? Like, is that some secret code for something? Or I don't know, but this week's going to be sweet." And so they leave, and they walk out of town, and they climb the next big hill or the next mountain over. And that's a mountain called the Mount of Olives. And they sit down. And as they sit there, and I want you to picture this, they can look across the valley to Jerusalem, and you got this huge white temple, this huge city, you got this big temple complex, everything's white, they can see the gleaming gold and the gleaming silver, and they cannot stop thinking about Jesus' comment that it would all be destroyed. And so they ask him, as they're all sitting there overlooking the valley, overlooking Jerusalem, they're like, "Hey, Jesus, you remember that, what you said when we were leaving like an hour ago? Okay, can I follow up question? I got a question right here. When will that happen? I don't understand. You're saying the temple's going to be destroyed. I don't understand why, but I'm like when? Like, that's not going to be happening this week, all right, for sure. So, like, you're going to be king, and this just doesn't make any sense. And what will be the sign when these things are about to take place? Like, is there some sort of sign that you could give us that we'll know that these things are about to happen?" And they're just like, "This really doesn't fit into my timeline. Like, how will we know it's going to happen? Like, what sign will there be?" And what Jesus does here, and you have to focus in here for just a second, Jesus is going to answer them, but the way he's going to do it is he's going to answer in a general, broad sense, and he's going to talk about the end and the future in general, and then he's going to focus in to specifically Jerusalem and the temple, and then he's going to broaden back out. You guys got me? Does that make sense? Okay, we'll walk through this together. This is how he answers. He looks at him, and he says, "Watch out." All right, now that's not answering their question. They're saying when. He's like, "Hey, be ready." He's saying, "Watch out, be on guard, all right, that you are not deceived." It's this idea that he's like, the world around us is full of lies. Like we understand that, right? Like, what's truth, what's not? It's really hard. Like, you watch the news, you're like, "I don't know if that's true or not." Like, you know, it's just difficult. And what he's saying is the world is full of lies. He says, don't fall for them. In fact, that's Satan's, that's the enemy's best tactic, right? That's his best tool. We see that all the way back in the beginning, right, in the book of Genesis. That's how he deceives us. Like, that's how he convinced us to sin in the first place. And so he's saying, don't be deceived. Don't fall for the lies. For many will come in my name, saying either I'm Jesus, or I'm the Christ, or I'm the Messiah. I am he. And he says, some will even come and they'll say, "Hey, the time is near." All right, talking about the end of the world, saying, "Hey, the end of the world's coming. Like, I know what that is. I know what's going on here." You guys have heard that before, right? I remember back in 2012, like that was the Mayan calendar or whatever. And, you know, there's been things, you know, since then where once in a while you'll hear someone say, well, you know, they predict it's going to happen on this date, right? Or even just saying in general, it's coming this year or within the next 10 years or whatever it might be. What's he say? Don't follow them. He says, don't believe them. They don't know. He says, when you hear of wars, here's your sign. When you hear of wars and rebellions, he says, don't be alarmed, right? Don't worry. You ever watch the news and it kind of makes you a little anxious, right? Worries you a little bit, kind of stresses you out. You see, maybe it's politics, or maybe it's things happening in the world in other countries, or maybe it's like some natural disaster happens and you're just like, ah, you know, like, this is terrible. Like, oh, you know, you start kind of freaking out, right? Here's Jesus saying, hey, we as Jesus followers, it's not really what we do. We aren't to worry. In fact, when we see the terrible things happening in this world, right, instead of giving us anxiety and worry and or really stress us out, right, he said we should logically think, okay, we know that these things are gonna happen. Like, it shouldn't surprise us at all. You know why? Because we know that it is necessary that these things take place first. And so his disciples are hearing this, they're like, okay, all right. First, so like, okay, so like these things happen, some wars and stuff like that, and then we set up your kingdom, all right? Because that makes sense, because Rome ain't going to just let us go, so they're probably going to come against us in war, so we have to have some sort of war, all right? And then we set up as you, as king, and Jesus is like, nah, actually, nah, not yet. And they're like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, he says, you want a sign for the end? This is what you'll know. It's not that. He says, nation will rise up against nation, and kingdom will rise up against kingdom. And there will be violent earthquakes and famines and plagues in various places, and there will be terrifying sights and great signs from heaven. By the way, this stuff hasn't happened yet, okay? This is stuff in our future, or maybe things that we're kind of seeing, but not to the extent of what Jesus is saying. And the word for heaven here is like sky. So this could be like space, sure. It could be like storms. It could be whatever, right? Great signs from heaven. What he's saying, hey, you want a sign? How about that for a sign? How about some earthquakes? We'll throw in some famines and plagues and you know, terrifying things up in the sky. How about some of that? And they're like, oh, okay, so we'll get some of that, and some of that will happen, and then the end will come. Like, then we can finally set you up as king, and we can worship you, and I can get my sweet new gig. Like, that's the plan. And Jesus is like, actually, not quite. He says, before all those things, he like keeps going. He says, they will lay their hands on you. That's not a good thing, by the way, right? And they will persecute you, and they will hand you over to synagogues and prisons, and you will be brought before kings and governors because of my name, because you follow me. He says, but this is actually good news, because this will give you an opportunity to bear witness. It's disciples, when they hear this, I mean, everything is like, you know, all this external stuff, like this will happen, all these signs and stuff, and they're like, okay, now we're ready. He's like, but first, you have to be like thrown in prison, and they're going to take you to court. They're going to do all kinds of bad things to you, and I bet the disciples are like, wait, what? And he's like, no, that's cool. It's totally cool, Jesus is saying, all right? Because that's actually an opportunity for you to tell people about me, which, by the way, is our main job, right? Okay. All right, like if you've come here for any amount of time, I want you to understand, if you call yourself a Christian or if you've given your life over to Jesus, which isn't everybody in this room, I want you to understand, you need to understand your main job and your main mission in life, the thing that brings your life meaning, is to do whatever you possibly can to tell as many people as you possibly can about what Jesus has done for them, and that he offers them forgiveness, and that they can have that forgiveness like you. That's it. Like, everything we do in life as a Christian should revolve around that. Like, that's it. It's the same mission for us as it was for them, by the way. And I'm assuming at this point in the conversation, the disciples aren't, like, super excited. Like, that's not great news. He's like, oh, yeah, first you got to go to prison. So that's going to be awesome, and you're going to love that. Okay, so we'll do that, and then you'll know. But Jesus, he keeps going. It's like he piles on. You ever have that friend who you ask them, how's it going? You know, maybe they're doing some medical issue or something like that, and they just kind of spill it all out, like everything, like way too much information. They're like, hey, yeah, I got this thing, and then you want to check this out. Like, you see one of these before? You know, like that. Okay? Now, I'm not saying that Jesus is giving us a bunch of useless information. I mean, this is all his word, so it's all extremely valuable. But I think at this point, his disciples are starting to get the idea. I mean, he's just told him, hey, you got to go to prison. They're like, oh, I didn't realize that. And Jesus doesn't stop as he's sitting up there on this mountain overlooking Jerusalem about what will happen. And he keeps going. He says, yeah, it's going to be crazy. Not only will you go to prison, but you're going to be betrayed by, guess what? By who? By your parents and your brothers and your relatives and your friends. And some of you guys, they're even going to kill. It's going to be crazy. And you will be hated by everybody because of my name. All right? But not a hair of your head will be lost. By your endurance, you actually gain your life. I mean, kind of a downer here, right? I mean, here's Jesus. They're asking about it. He's like, well, you know, some things have to happen first. One of the things that has to happen is you got to go to prison. You got to be betrayed by your parents and stuff. And some of you guys will be killed and you're going to be hated by everybody. Awesome, right? Like, that's not like an exciting thing to hear about, right? And then after that, he says, and not a hair of your head will be lost. And you're like, what? Jesus, you just told them that they would be killed, okay? So it sounds like that their hair will be lost. You know, like, that's not good. See, what he's talking about here is he's not talking physically. It's almost he's saying the opposite. He's saying, hey, your body will be beaten, broken, and killed. And I'm going to go first. But you, who you actually are, who you are on the inside, your soul, the thing that actually matters, will be so saved. Why? Because we are his followers. Right, because we've given our life to him. Again, not everybody in this room has done this, but a lot of us in this room, we have put 100% of our trust into Jesus and what he did on that cross, that he paid for everything we've ever done wrong. And so Jesus gives them the bad news. It's not going to go down like you think, but guess what? The most important thing, your soul, all right, will be saved. And so Jesus tells them that, and now Jesus focuses to the heart of their question, specifically Jerusalem. Right, he says, when you see Jerusalem, you're asking about that, surrounded by armies, which is a pretty obvious sign. All right, Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then you'll know it's going to happen. All right, he says, then recognize that its desolation or destruction has come near. He says, in those days, or in Judea, they must flee to the mountains, and those inside the city must leave it, and those who are in the country, they must not enter it. You got to stay away from Jerusalem, because it's going to be a bloodbath, because these are the days of vengeance to fulfill all the things that are written. By the way, where are they written? Old Testament. Yeah, in the Bible. He says, woe to pregnant women and nursing mothers in those days. All right, he's saying, I feel bad for the ladies. I feel bad for the moms and the nursing mothers, for there will be a great distress in the land and wrath against this people. What people? This is the Jewish people who are actually about to reject Jesus as their king, as their Messiah that God had promised them for hundreds and thousands of years, right? They were getting ready to reject him just later on that week. He says those people will be killed by the sword and be led captive into all the nations. See, he's describing the fall of Jerusalem, which is an event that has already taken place. We actually talked a little bit about this last week. Can I go on one more tangent real quick? Okay, let me talk about that. All right, 30 years after Jesus is having this conversation on this mountain, all right, in 66 AD, the Jews decide to protest and they start rioting against Rome. All right, you know what they were freaking out about? Paying taxes, and I respect that, okay? Like, I would have been right there rioting with them, however Jew back then rioted. They didn't want to pay taxes. Again, they were paying taxes to a foreign, horrible, abusive government, and that had already taken them over and that keeps killing a bunch of their people. And so they riot and they protest. In response, the Roman governor, who was in charge of the area of Jerusalem, what he does is he goes in and he takes all the money from the temple treasury, okay? Which, again, it was super ornate. There's tons of money in there. All the Jewish people would give back a portion of what God has given to them back to God. And so he goes in and he takes from the temple treasury all the money and all the riches that it has by force. Not only that, but he arrested the top Jewish officials. Now, as you can imagine, that angered many, many, many Jews. And so the Jewish people, they gathered and they rebelled against Rome. And this is something that you did not do, because Rome is the powerhouse on earth. I mean, they own the planet, basically. And they actually took Jerusalem by force. like the Jewish people retook their capital city, Jerusalem, and they set up their own government. And so for a few years, there was a brand new Israel back on the map. I mean, they were pumped. They were excited. And obviously, you can imagine that Rome was not going to just sit back and let this happen. And so Rome sent an entire legion to go crush this rebellion. And as the legion was within this area, the Jewish people, they came. And they ambushed this legion, and they actually, miracle type thing, they actually defeated this legion. In fact, over 6,000 Roman soldiers were killed, and it was a major defeat. It was so embarrassing for Rome. This like rabble of Jewish people, Jewish men, they somehow defeated by ambushing, all right, an entire Roman legion and kind of just wiped them off the map. I mean, this was so embarrassing. And so for Rome, it's like, all right, we own a bunch of different people groups all over the world. There's going to be uprisings all over the place when news of this gets out. And so they had to respond in strength. And so Emperor Nero sent four legions, not one, he quadruples the amount, four legions to go crush the rebellion, and that's exactly what they did. And it wasn't pretty. They started up north in Galilee. That's where Jesus spent most of his time. And 100,000 Jews were either killed or put into slavery as the Roman legions came through. In fact, many Jewish refugees that escaped either slavery or escaped being killed, they all ran to Jerusalem for safety. So Jerusalem kind of swelled when it came to population because of that. And not only that, but it was also the time of the Jewish Passover, which is a huge festival that we've already talked about, where tens of thousands of Jewish people from all over the world would all descend upon Jerusalem to celebrate this festival. And so the legions waited until all the travelers from all over the world got into Jerusalem, and then the legions came and surrounded Jerusalem where no one could go in and no one could go out. And they were there for 7 months, 5 to 7 months. Meanwhile, inside the city, infighting began. And different people groups are fighting for control. People started, they started killing each other. And there was a bunch of assassinations happening. And right outside their gates, the most powerful army in the world was waiting for them. And a panic set in on the city, as you would imagine it would. And at one point, their entire food supply burns. And they start killing each other in mass. And they start eating each other. I mean, it's just horrible, horrible, terrible stuff. It got desperate. No wonder Jesus is saying, man, I feel bad for the pregnant moms. I mean, it's just a terrible state. We cannot imagine what it would have been like to live in Jerusalem during these few months. We have no idea. And eventually, the legions, they broke through all three walls that surrounded the city, and they massacred the city. Eyewitnesses say that 1.1 million, I mean, just picture that number, 1.1 million people, Jewish people, died in that city, and they burned the city to the ground. They pulled down every stone, and they burned the temple. And the general, his name was Titus, he would actually go on to become an emperor later on in his life. But Titus, his goal was that whenever anybody would walk past this mountain of rubble, that they would not believe that anybody had ever lived there, let alone a million people. And so Jesus, picture this, and his disciples are sitting on the next hill over. And it's at night, and they're overlooking the city, and the disciples have all these questions. And Jesus, he starts general, but then he focuses in on Jerusalem and says, yeah, it's going to be horrible, it's going to be terrible. The people don't understand. All they have to do is accept me as king. They don't understand rejecting me, what this road is going to lead to. I'm trying to warn them, but they're not listening, and they don't want nothing to do with me. And he's telling them about what's going to happen in just a few short decades. And so Jesus pulls out again, and he goes back to talking about the end in general in a much more broad of a sense, right? He says, then there will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars. Again, this is stuff for us, stuff that's going to happen in our future. And there will be anguish on the earth among the nations, bewildered by the roaring of the sea and of the waves, all right? Things are going to be happening. He says, people will actually faint from fear and expectation of the things that are coming on the world because the powers of the heavens will be shaken. I don't even know what that means. But stuff in the sky will be happening. And then, he says, they will see the Son of Man. He's talking about himself here. This is in a future time. Coming in a cloud with power and this time with glory. The opposite of how he came last time. But when these things begin to take place and when everybody starts freaking out, he says, you those who follow me, you stand up and you lift your head because your redemption is near. He's saying, when you watch these terrifying things happening, right? Everybody, the world will be in a panic, but not you. He's saying, not my people. All right, my people, all right? For us, this is good news because that means the wait for Jesus is almost over. He's saying, you lift up your head. As everybody goes, runs, hides, you don't hide. All right, you lift up your head and you watch. And so Jesus is saying, that's how it's going to be, and that's what I want you to do. And specifically, he even goes further. He says, and for you right now, and this is for us here today, he says, I want you to be on your guard. I want you to be alert. I want you to be ready so that your minds are not dulled from carousing and drunkenness. I had to look that word up. I'm like, what's carousing? Do I even want to know what that is? You know, I don't know. But that actually means like your hangover after being drunk, okay? And kind of the excitement of getting drunk before. It's like before and after, kind of a weird word, all right? But he's saying, you don't want to be dulled from your hangovers, right? All right? You don't want to be dulled from drunkenness, all right? You don't want to have your mind dulled from the worries of life. I think that's probably what most people in here are struggling with, right? As we worry about all these little things in our life, he's like, no, that dulls your mind. That your focus isn't right. He says, or that day will come upon you unexpectedly like a trap, for it will come on all who live on the face of the entire earth. It's coming for everybody. So for you, you be alert at all times. He says, you be ready. It's this idea of being a good worker. We talked about the story last week that he told where he's like, hey, you need to be like a good worker. You need to be ready, all right, for the boss to show up at any time because you don't know when he's coming. He's like, yeah, there'll be signs, but you don't know the moment. And so you need to be using your time, your talents, your abilities, your resources to help people find him before it is too late. It's this idea that you need to work as hard as you can, spending the most of your short life that God has given you to save as many people as you can. And for the true Christian or for the true Jesus follower, all right, we are people who have experienced the forgiveness and the grace that God has given us, and this is what our life is to be all about, is helping others find that forgiveness and helping others find that grace. Like, this is it. Like, it changes everything. It changes the way we make decisions every day. It changes the way that we live our life. I mean, it changes everything. We're to be focused every day on that. But most of us, if we're honest, I mean, let's be real. Most of us, if we're honest, that's not how we live. Like, we're totally distracted. Totally distracted. We got all kinds of things going on in our life. We're just distracted by this and that. We got things at work going on. We got family stuff. We got house stuff. We got projects. We got all these things that are distracting. I'm not saying it's wrong to have those things. Of course, it's not. But our main focus needs to remain the same. All right? Our main focus is to help as many people as we can find Jesus. I think for a lot of us, we're far from alert. Like, alert is not the word that we would use to describe ourselves. That's what Jesus is telling us to be. See, not only are we to live this way as individuals, each one of us in our community out there saving as many people as God has put into our little world that we can, right? Which is to be the main focus, right? It's the last thing that Jesus tells us to do. We'll get there eventually, you know, in a few months, I don't know, before he goes back up to heaven. But that's our job. In fact, that's why we came to Tiffin in the first place. We had 200 people, 5 years ago, we had 200 people driving to Fremont campus each and every week, which is great, all right? That's cool. That's totally honest, or it's totally awesome. But we wanted to make it easier for you to invite your family and your friends to church, right? Because that's what matters. Right, not just inviting them to church. The main thing is we want to help you, make it easier for you to help lead people to Jesus. And we know church plays a big role in that. And so we want to help it make it easier for you to save as many as you can. So that's why we came to Tiffin. And it was a risk. I mean, we don't talk about this much. We don't think about it because it's gone so well. But like, we poured out a ton of money to make this thing happen. All right, a ton. And it was like, what are we doing? I remember when we bought this building, I'm like, oh, this building is terrible. You know, I'm like, this is an auditorium, you know, it's a garage. It's, you know, it's just like, what are we doing? It was a risk, man. I left my role in Fremont, wasn't sure how that was going to turn out, you know. But God has immensely blessed what has happened here in Tiffin, more than I could ever imagine. I mean, it's what God does. It's my lack of faith at the beginning. I totally recognize it. And he started day one. He was moving. If you remember, a few years ago, February of 22, we started our Everyone on Three movement that we were going to be about for 3 years. And by the way, that's going to end this next February. I know a lot of you guys are involved with that. I want to say thank you. But that idea is that everybody, okay, no matter how long you've been here or not, we want everybody at all three campuses to be working towards three goals for 3 years, whether you're helping a lot or helping a little. And those three goals were, number one, to create children's space, number two, to train 20 new leaders, and number three, to launch a new campus by 2025, all right? Those were our goals, and those were some lofty goals. I don't know if we all understand that, but even on staff, we had many discussions and debates about whether that was stupid to have something, so high and have a goal so high of making those things happen. And we're like, it's going to be so embarrassing. It was just all this stuff, right? But we got it there, and it's good. I was pumped. Those are the three things we've been working towards. So creating children's space, right? That was our number one thing. That's something that obviously we've been working on a lot here in Tiffin specifically. As you drove in today, you saw our new children's space. It should be open by this next fall. Within that children's space, we have a brand new nursery that's going to be huge. That's part of our master plan. That'll be the permanent nursery. We'll have a classroom, and then we'll have a large indoor playground space, which we are viewing as a tool simply to reach the families that are outside, that aren't here at our church yet. Okay, that's our goal. We as a church, we want to invest in the next generation. Okay, and so this playground will be open to the community. That's our plan. And by the way, can I just point this out? We're not building this building for our kids. It's not for our kids, okay? It's for the kids who aren't here yet. We're building it for them, who are, by the way, the future of our church. And I've said this many times, you guys should know this, but churches who do not invest in the next generation, what happens to them? They die, yeah. And we have examples all around us of churches that are dying. It's a slow death. It takes decades and decades and decades because people are actually die off, But churches that do not reach the next generation, they eventually all die, unfortunately. And so that's what we're working on. We have, if you want to see more about that, there's a TV right outside this back door on this wall that will kind of show more stuff. We'll have some more stuff on that TV next week. And so we're excited about that. Our Fremont campus was also working towards this. They last summer were able to complete in this space. They completed their indoor playground. And so they got the under the sea type theme. They got a big like sunken ship and a playground in there. It's a pretty sweet thing. And then our Northwood campus also, for them, they didn't have much space inside. So they built a playground on their outside. And they got a really sweet setup because they are surrounded. They got like a big neighborhood right behind them. And so people from the neighborhood can come and can use this. It's kind of like a park. They got a sweet property there as well. And so it's just a really, really good setup for them. And so this fall, we're the ones slowing everybody up. This fall, we could say that all three campuses have completed their goal of creating a new children's space. And so we got number one almost done. All right, our second goal was to train new leaders. Now, this is what we realized. Is that as we grow and as we expand, which we as a church should be doing, because if we're not growing, then that means we're not doing our job, okay? But as we grow and as we expand, we've realized that we don't have the leaders needed, all right? And so we want to be intentional as a church on training up new leaders for full-time ministry. And so far, our plan, our goal was to train 20 leaders for ministry. And so far, I counted them up yesterday, we have 20 individuals that have gone through either our internship or a residency program. And so we'll probably have some more before the year's over. And so for us, we're going to exceed this goal, which is awesome. And so we'll have probably more than 20 that will have completed this by the time the 3 years is over. All right, so we've all completed that. Done. Check. Got that box set. The third thing that we've been working on, or that we planned to do, what was our goal, was to launch a new campus. Now, this is a huge endeavor. It's extremely difficult. I mean, some of you guys were a part of us launching here in Tiffin, so you know, like, it takes work, and it's is a pain in the butt, okay? But it's good. It's so far, that's been our best strategy on reaching new people is simply by campusing. And what we want to see in general is we want to see what happened here in Tiffin happen in other surrounding communities around us. And so we had launching a new campus by 2025. We will not hit that goal, okay? That's not going to happen. But we have identified a place to launch a new campus. And so I talked to you guys about, we had some big news that was coming up, and then I was like, oh, no, it didn't happen. And then it was like, maybe it will, then it didn't. You guys remember? Okay, you guys know what I'm talking about? All right. Just this past week, we were able to purchase a property in Sandusky, and we are pumped about the opportunity of starting a church and starting a campus in Sandusky. It's a great place. It's right on Route 4, just south of Sandusky. And this is the building. It's literally, I mean, it's turnkey. It's got all the stuff inside, tables and chairs and all the things that you can need, kids' classrooms. It's a church that died. And so we're able to go in and we're able to bring really that church, or the church, which is the people. We're able to bring that back to life, and that will be our campus. There's nobody that, I don't think people have met there for like a year. I mean, it's sad. It's a great reminder of how important it is to invest in the next generation. And so this is our big news. We're excited about this. This is going to be huge. Pastor Luke from our Fremont campus is going to take the lead on that. And so we are pumped. And what's cool about it is here in Tiffin, without you guys knowing, all right, we've been putting in our budget each and every year money that we could put aside to help launch a future campus. And so without you guys knowing, if you guys have been a part of giving or been generous with our church, you have played a role in purchasing this property and have played a role in the people that will be saved, all right, in Sandusky because of this campus. You're already a part of reaching people in Sandusky. And so that's what we as a church are always about. Sure, we want to build here, we want to reach our community here, but we also want to reach out to other communities around us. And so it's an exciting time to be a part of Grace. I mean, it's super exciting. God is doing some incredible things. We got some more exciting news we'll tell you in a couple of weeks. But we want what happened here in Tiffin to happen in communities, in other communities in Northwest Ohio. And we're not about building buildings to expand our little Grace kingdom, all right? That's not what we are about at all. That's not us, right? Every strategy that we have, every idea, some good, some terrible, okay, that we have, it's to help save the world around us. And we as a church want to be ready, and we as a church want to be alert and focused and working, doing his work of reaching the people in our community, just as Jesus tells us to be. And it's like when you realize what's at stake, heaven or hell, when you realize that you've been distracted by all these petty little things in your life. Like, I don't know, man, it just changes the way that you live. It's like me walking on that road in Arkansas 6 years ago, right? When you realize what's going on around you, like, it changes the way you walk, all right? It changes your focus. It makes you alert. And that's my question for you today. Are you alert? Is that how you would describe yourself? Are you doing what Jesus is telling you to do? Are you alert? Are you ready for the boss to come back? Are you a part of what's going on here at Grace, your church? Or are you like me on that road, totally oblivious to what's going on around you, totally distracted? See, like us, I think the disciples are distracted on that night 2,000 years ago as they sit on that hill overlooking Jerusalem. They had no clue about what was coming on later in that week. And as the days go by, Luke tells us that Jesus spends the rest of that week, he's teaching as many people as he can, he's helping as many people as he can until the end. Luke tells us that during the day, Jesus was out there teaching in the temple, but in the evening, he would go out and spend the night on what is called the Mount of Olives, which is what he's doing on this very night. And then all the people would come early in the morning to hear him teach in the temple. He did this on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday until the end. And we'll pick up there next week. Let's pray. God, we thank you for this time. God, it's an exciting time to be a part of this church. You have opened up doors. You have given us opportunities that, again, just throughout the years, we would never have guessed. We never would have imagined. Lord, we pray for our new Sandusky campus that it launches next year. that you would bless that, that you would gather people and that people would give their lives to you, and that we, at really all three campuses, that we'd all play a role in the making that happen. And God, we always got to be thinking outside of ourselves. And God, we thank you for everything. We thank you for everything that's going on here at our Tiffin campus so much. And all the good things that you have done for us. God, we ask that you would help us be ready and help us to work hard until you come back, because life is short and hell is real. And God, we thank you for this. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.